The best part of holiday gifting? Giving them something they'll use all year. During December deal drops at Lowe's, save $40 on select Craftsman V20 tools, now just $59. Plus, all rewards members get free standard shipping. Shop new December deal drops every week this month. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/10. While supplies last, free shipping excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Subject to change. Visit Lowe's.com/shipping terms for details.
Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is Conrad Ignatius Mario Maximilian Sewell, or Conrad Sewell for short. He's a singer-songwriter originally from Australia, and many people, including me, first heard his incredible angelic voice on the song Firestone with Kygo. The song has generated billions of streams and was one of those songs that anywhere you went, you heard it. He's also found success with his first EP, working on a Coca-Cola collaboration with the late Avicii, touring with Ed Sheeran and Maroon 5. He says touring across the world, however, took a toll on him mentally and physically. He was partying a lot and decided to do some self-reflecting in his songwriting for his new music. And his latest release, Ghosts and Heartaches, is a bit more raw and honest. We talked all about growing up in Australia and his band that he had previously before going solo with all of his childhood friends, the coffee in Australia, finding success here in America, his songwriting style, who inspires him, a bunch of stuff. It was great to meet him, so I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Someone recently told me that coffee in Australia is a lot different than here.
It is. So? Well, it's a lot better. It's just we win best coffee every year over the Italians.
Why?
We just take it very seriously. We're the best baristas in the world. So, like, you name it, we can draw it with milk.
Really?
Yeah, like, they can, like, so paint Monets with it. And it's just, like, we just, like, thoroughly, like, we're just a massive coffee country. So, like, there's, like, no Starbucks in Australia. There's just boutique hipster coffee shops everywhere. You know, like,
gotcha,
great coffee
yeah.
here, like Alfred Constance and all those kind of places.
Yeah.
There's one on every corner. Mm. In Australia, so
even like the small towns,
yeah, it's so much so that even like now there's a lot of like Australian breakfast. It's just breakfast in general. We're big on breakfasts, like really like cool, like creative breakfast spots.
Really,
yeah.
Is it similar to English breakfast? I feel like has a lot of
yeah. No,
beans.
English breakfast is like that. Well, the traditional English breakfast is yeah, like beans, bacon,
tomato,
eggs, stuff like that. Like.
Yeah.
But ours is more like avocado and toast and stuff like that. It's very much like an Australian thing.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's so it's the whole culture of coffee is more appreciated. So it's not necessarily like the beans growing there are better. It's more so just like everyone's more about it.
Yeah, just way more about
the
it.
Quality.
And yeah, we just care. You know what I mean? Like, especially when Australians come to America, they're like, oh, some shit American coffee. I actually like American coffee now, though. Mm. Like, this is a lovely American coffee I'm drinking.
That
right
is
now.
Like the typical American coffee.
But I like it. You know what I mean?
Like burnt
down
water. Yeah. That's how I feel about, like, when you get coffee from, say, McDonald's
yeah.
or something, you know? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, of course, yeah. Sometimes you got to be trashy. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Little bacon, egg, muffin, and coffee never hurt anybody.
No, it's true. Everyone, hey, when you're addicted to caffeine, you'll get it anywhere.
Exactly.
That's me.
That is me to a T.
I like, who gave you this very long name?
My mother. I come from a very Catholic family. So all the boys have Mary in their name throughout the family from, you know, centuries and centuries. And my mum found out that the masculine version of Mary is Mario. So I got Conrad. Ignatius is my uncle. And Mario, and then Maximilian. So she just like, I don't know, she wanted us all to have big, powerful names. My sister's Grace Mary Elizabeth. My brother's Oliver James David Mary.
Oh, they all have multiple middle names.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Was that hard to spell
when
you were
a
little kid?
Yeah, but my mum taught me, everything my mum taught me, it would always be in song. So she would sing a song with my name in it, or like if I needed to like figure out where I lived, she would like teach me a song that
like three, like two,
yeah.
one, whatever
yeah.
street,
yeah, exactly.
whatever town.
Yeah.
Just like a melody. Oh yeah.
yeah. I found it easier to learn through song.
Yeah.
Never talked about that before, but there we go. Maybe that has something to do with my songwriting ability.
Like, no, but when you come up with, that happens a lot in school, or just like when you're trying to learn something, when you come up with sort of like a funny saying or a song, yeah. I feel like that definitely
totally.
Helps.
I have a terrible memory now, actually, probably from years of brain damage, but just before that was the only way I could remember things.
Maybe
I should start doing that for important things, just writing songs about it again.
I have to be there at 3. Right. Definitely. Did you like school?
I hated school. Oh. Yeah. I mean, I liked parts of high school, and like by the end of high school, I had it kind of figured out and had my ways around teachers, and I had my best mate pretended that he had, he didn't really pretend it. His mum was just a bit of a hypochondriac. So he wrote a letter saying that he had a bowel problem. So I was the only kid that got to drive to school because I was like his unofficial driver. And we got to rock up at school like whenever we wanted. So 12th
grade. Oh, because like it could happen anytime.
So we'd rock up at school like midday. So it got better towards the end, but like generally I wasn't a very diligent student.
Yeah. I was reading, so you were making music from a young age, not necessarily like...
Yeah, pretty much. Like my mum bought me my first like tape. That's how old I am. And I put it in my Walkman at probably about 7 and just started learning songs and breaking them down and, you know, reading the lyrics on the back of the covers and trying to sing them. And then by like 9, my mum sort of noticed that I was actually holding the notes and like, you know, I had a tone. So I started to, you know, take it more seriously. And I recorded my first demo at like 10 at this place, like out in the boonies in Australia. The boonies is like out in the bush kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that. So your mom, was it your mom's idea to make a demo?
My mom was very cool. My mom was very creative. She had like a magazine company. So she was, you know, I think a lot of parents would be like, oh, he can sing, I'm going to put him in the school choir or something like that. When my mom was like, yo, let's make a record. And that's the way she thought, right? I mean, like, she was like, let's call the biggest producer in the world, which we did at 11 years of age.
Who?
He was one of them. A guy called Tim Blacksmith, who managed Stargate at the time, who, like, did Neo's record and stuff like that. Nice. So, like, I emailed him. I never got an email back, but funnily enough, I did get an email back about 15 years later. And I ran into him at Coachella this year and we were hanging out. We were laughing about it.
Did he see your original email?
Yeah. I was like, look up. He Leo, the guy who signed me over here, played him a song, Start Again, one of my songs. And he sent me an email. Tim sent me an email saying, yo, I love that song of yours. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. Read up in your email thread.
Search back.
Yeah. And so it's crazy. That's a pretty crazy story. But you know, so she was very supportive from day one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what put that in me that, like, you know, I can, why not call one of the biggest producers in the world? Or why not pack up and move to America or move to Europe or whatever?
I mean, all they can do is just not answer you.
Exactly, yeah.
Wait 15 years to respond.
What's the worst that can happen? They say no. Right, kids?
Are you the oldest?
I'm the middle child, sorry. If that's middle. The youngest. Yeah, so I have a little sister who she's a singer as well. And I have an older brother who's not in the industry.
He's not.
He didn't get any talent, unfortunately.
He can't sing?
He's pretty devastated about it.
Can either of your parents sing?
My mum can hold a note. My dad can't sing. My mum's parents were singers, though. My grandparents were like, they toured with the Bee Gees back in the day. They were like very much...
Yeah, that's what they asked you on Good Day LA last time you were here.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Toured with the Bee Gees. Yeah. Are the Bee Gees...
Australian. Barry Gibb's Australian.
So they grew. So they got big in Australia.
They kind of got big everywhere at the same time, but they were like a touring, like before they were called the Bee Gees, it was like them and their sister and they would tour like county fairs in Australia stuff. And that's when my grandparents would play shows with them.
Yeah.
Because they were like...
Oh, right. They're all siblings. They're all brothers, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
So, so there's definitely music in the family.
Yeah. Did your mom say, hey, Conrad and your sister's name is Grace?
Yes.
Did she say, why don't you guys do like a family style thing?
The Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Not really, because there's a 9-year age difference with me and my sister. So It was more like I was already making music, and then she was from a very young age. She was also like jumping in front of me and like trying to dance and sing, and you could tell that she had the bug as well. And it was just a matter of time before she started. I think at like 5 or 6, she was like belting Mariah Carey and stuff. So and better than I was a lot younger. So she signed a deal at like 15 and dropped out of school, and she moved to Atlanta, and she's on Sony RCA now, and she had that big record with G-Eazy, You Don't Know Me.
Yeah, You Don't Know Me.
Yeah, so she's extremely talented.
Who moved to America first?
I did. I sort of moved to Europe with my band, and then when my band got dropped from Universal over there, I moved here to just write, and sort of, I knew that songs changed things, you know what I mean? Right. It made people care again. You know, i.e. your record label would put money behind you again if they thought you had a hit. So I just came over here and I just wrote every day. And I lived on people's couches, and I would call home and ask dad to send over $100 here and there, and just sing money at pubs. And then, eventually I got a deal. And then my sister came over a couple of years after that.
Got it. And she came to Atlanta.
She went to Atlanta because her manager was there at the time. But as soon as she did her deal with Sony, she pretty much moved as well.
Were your parents like, oh, man?
A little bit, yeah. I think they were a little worried, mainly for her because she was so young. But, when your kid's got a dream, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's what it is.
And they'd seen me follow my dream, and things happen. And I think if the kid's talented, they never like, oh, shit, what's she doing? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got a voice.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be right.
Your band, I was reading about your band.
Yeah.
Sons of Midnight.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
How'd you guys know each other?
We were all, so like, I was always singing like R&B and soul growing up. And then in grade 12, when I was 17, it was like the indie rock invasion in Australia, and like the Killers and Kings of Leon and the Strokes, Arctic Monkeys, all that were like, I would just fell in love with all that. And I was 17 and thought I was a badass. So I was like, man, screw this pop stuff. I'm going to sing rock and roll. So I put the band together with my best mate, Matt. They're all school, but we all went to a Catholic all-boys school. So we formed the band. And really, we just wanted to be Kings of Leon and the Strokes. We drank like absolute animals. And we occasionally played at these like dingy bars. And that's how we got girls. And we thought we were the biggest rock stars in the world. And we were really weren't. But
didn't you play for the Princess of
Monaco? We ended up getting signed. Like, we were like a pop. We had the most badass rock and roll. We were the real deal. Like, we were a rock and roll band. We would drink any band on the table. We played great, but we were a pop. We were so pop. So it was like completely like the wrong style of music. We ended up doing a deal with Universal, and we all moved to Berlin in Germany. And just like the Backstreet Boys, we planned on starting it in Germany.
Yeah, I was just about to say, all these boy bands started in Germany. Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Lady Gaga started in Germany. Lana Del Rey started in Germany. Hmm. It's a huge market. It's like the third, fourth biggest music market. So the plan was it would go well at Universal Germany, and then it would open the doors to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
The record like peaked in the top 20, and we spent a whole year in Europe touring and living the dream, as we say, with my best mates.
Yeah, best friends, 18 years old. You know, amazing.
We would play like all ages festivals and like demand there be beer and whiskey in the thing. It wasn't even an alcoholic festival. But like, those are some of the greatest times of my life, thinking back on it. And we did that, you know, we did that Princess of Monaco thing and all those random things that happened. But it clearly wasn't going to go any further than that, I think. And once I realized that, and you know, I told the boys that's when I decided to move to America and make music that fitted my voice instead of, you know, trying to be Julian Casablancas.
I always think when you're in a band and it's kind of collaborative, I'm assuming, you know, like someone will maybe write the song, but then other people contribute the music and kind of the melody, everything. It seems very collaborative. And then you leave that and go to a solo situation.
Yeah.
Was that weird?
Well, for me, I was always writing the songs anyway. Oh. So like, it wasn't as weird. And that's the other reason why I think the band didn't work, because great bands need that chemistry. You know what I mean? Like the Killers wouldn't be the Killers without their guitar lines. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like Kings of Leon wouldn't be Kings of Leon without the drums that Nathan comes up with. Do you know what I mean? Like creative instrumentation. And we didn't have that. We were just mimicking our favorite bands. Because the boys were all great players, but I'm just totally bagging out my best friends right now. But you know, and they'll probably agree with you. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they were coming up with some crazy Radiohead licks that, you know, gave our band a signature style of music. We were just mimicking all our favorite bands. The only thing signature about our band was my voice. So it was like it was very obvious when I left that what to do.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So not sounding cocky and paying out all my best friends.
That's all right. You guys go back. Yeah. They can handle no,
they
it,
understand.
Right?
What
do they?
Buddies.
What
they
do they do now? Are they still playing music?
They all. I mean, they all like the guitarist is my best friend. He's still my guitarist, so we still travel the world and play music together, which is great.
Nice.
The other guitarist is he works. See, he works for me every now and then, and like he's, you know, he's one of my best friends. He's always around, helping out with stuff. He's kind of like my turtle in Entourage.
And I like that reference.
The other one, Mitch, is he goes by the name of Hazlitt now. He's a solo artist, been putting out great stuff. He was the bass player. And the drummer is opened a bar, and he's a full-time alcoholic. Just kidding, Mo, I love you.
Nice. So when you, where did you meet Kygo?
Well, I wrote Firestone here in LA with a friend of mine called Tinas, and Kygo wasn't signed yet. Oh, I think he just signed his deal with Sony. And my manager and Leo Cohen, who's the head of my record label, were trying to sign Kygo. And I was already signed, and Firestone was just a record that I had. And they flew to Norway to try and sign Kygo to 300, not knowing that he'd actually already done a deal with Sony. And while they were sitting in Kygo's parents' house, they played the demo of Firestone to him. And they're like, well, if you're not going to sign with us, we have this kid that we signed. He's an incredible singer, and this is the song. And Kygo heard it, and he loved it, and Sony loved it. And they were like, Kygo hadn't put out any original music yet. It was all remixes. So he, you know, he produced it up, and, you know, it sounded what you hear today.
I'm afraid, short of fire, I'm the dark in need of light. When we touch, you inspire, feel it changing me tonight. So take me up, take me higher, there's a world not far from here. We can die in desire, hearts alive, firestorms, and when they strike, we feel the love. Sparks will fly, they ignite our bones, and when they strike, we light up the world. Hearts alive, firestorms, and when they strike, we feel the love. Sparks will fly, they ignite.
I remember like the first day we had a million streams on Spotify or something like that. And
right,
I was like,
so
wow.
That's
I had no idea who he was. And so I didn't meet him until we got in the studio together in LA to like finish the vocals up and stuff like that. But yeah, that just sort of set the whole thing off.
Yeah. It's so funny. I remember when I moved to Los Angeles about 4 years ago, that song was always playing everywhere, like a pregame, just like a day party. Like every time we were about to go out, literally everywhere. It was like you couldn't even avoid it.
Yeah,
and in a good way. It was great. Yeah. And I always used to listen to the acoustic version.
Thank you.
Which is amazing.
That was it's so great. You know, that song's a perfect example of you never know what's going to connect or what's going to be the thing, because I turned that song off halfway through when I first heard it, like when I got the version back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, whatever, another DJ song.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the kind of music you were listening to.
I never listened to dance music. You know, I listened to R&B and stuff and pop songs and hip-hop. So, like, the dance world was very much unknown to me. But I guess my voice kind of sits well on that stuff. And now I have a new love for dance music because I've traveled the world with Kygo.
Thrust into it.
I've done songs with all those guys. And that I get it now. I get how it makes people feel, and that's what I love about it. But it's like I'm not bumping it in my car. You know what I mean?
But
that song just kind of had a life of its own.
How long were you in Los Angeles before you wrote that song?
About 3 years.
Were you kind of like? I feel like moving here is really disorienting. And I mean, totally. I don't know if what city did you live in Australia?
I lived in Brisbane, which is, you know, a smaller city. But LA was always like a dream to me. And like when I got here, I mean, I didn't make like an official move. I just came with a backpack and never went home. You know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah.
And like I would just, even when I mean, literally legally couldn't even stay. I'd have to leave every now and then because of the visas and stuff like that. Now I'm official. I'm street legal, guys, so it's all good. but you know, it was scary because I had no money. I was living on this guy's couch and I didn't know when it was like, I wasn't getting any younger. And it was like, I needed something like Firestone or something. Start Again was actually the song that got me my record deal. I needed a song that was going to put some money in my pocket and change things.
Yeah, were you working somewhere else? How were you making money?
I mean, I would go home. I would literally go home. I would work at a pub for a couple of months, save enough money to come back.
Yeah.
Live off nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was pretty chubby back then because I could only eat burgers, really. That's all I could afford.
Beer,
obviously. Lots of beer and bad coffee. But being a musician, you're a hustler, man. Like, whatever you... I'd gig here and there. I'd go home. I'd charge someone through the roof for a wedding, sing for a couple of hours and make a couple of grand. Like, you can do that. Bounce without paying tax. Kidding.
No, definitely. That'd be a great job.
I mean, my boys still make crazy money just from doing shows and, like, you know, you can make a decent living off being a musician. It's just, but the life is a hustle. You don't, it's not like you can settle down and be like, all right, honey, we're buying a house next year. Yeah. It's like, honey, I don't know when I'm playing my next show, but I might get a good check for it.
Yeah.
It's a certain way of living that not everyone's cut out for.
I was thinking about it when I was kind of reading about you and you coming in here, I was just sort of thinking about how it's a huge sacrifice to want to be a musical artist because like not only sacrificing your time you know to like constantly work at stuff but also like your health and
why your health
just because you know if you're up late and your sleep schedule you know what I mean like if you're up late playing shows you know what I mean
no totally I mean you're like an athlete at the end of the day it gets to a point where you like that if you gotta sing every night that's a muscle you're using and you gotta perform at a high level, it's you got to take care of yourself like crazy. I'm only just really realizing that, but it's a lot of sacrifice. You can't have. I mean, a lot of the time, it's hard to have a relationship, but you never see your family.
Yeah,
you don't have any security. You're always wanting more. You know, you always need this validation.
Yeah,
in fact, it sucks. I'm
kidding. I'm not happy. Yeah, I mean, like, do you ever give Grace advice, or does she not need it?
No, I do. I mean, I'm a big brother, so I've got to give her advice. She gives me advice a lot as well. But I try to, you know, I just try to tell her to be strong and tell her to be the boss and to be, I mean, she's already the boss and she's a strong female, so I don't have to tell her too much, but just, you know, at a young age, you can get pulled in so many directions by people. And I think it's just important for young kids getting into the industry to know that everything is in their control and they just need to hold on to that and not let people pull them in all these different directions and tell them what's right or wrong. Because I think if you know, it's all inside of you, you know what I mean? As cheesy as that sounds, it's
really
the truth.
That's what I like about Entourage is because all of Vinny's friends are like from the
neighborhood. Anyone that likes Entourage, you're good with me. Yeah. No, totally. And that's what, like me, I keep a small circle around me. And most of the people that work with me are all, you know, lifelong friends and people you trust and people that tell you when you're messing up, which I've done a lot in the past. And that, so my circle's got even smaller now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes that can be a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like you need 100 friends. Like, I don't think you need 100 okay friends. I think you need like 3 good friends.
Yeah. That's what we're very much deciding that this year. You know, especially living in LA, there's so many people that just are your friends because of who you are or what you bring to the table or what club you can get them into. Like,
And
for a minute, I was very much in that scene. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when you first move here, that's almost how you meet people, you know, and that's how you meet connections even in the industry.
It's almost like you kind of have to do that.
You kind of have to do that a little bit. You have to hustle and like, you know, it can only get you so far and it's only so like, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I can't imagine you're working at something and, like, you know, say you're playing a bunch of shows and, you know, people are maybe there to hear music, but they're not necessarily there to see you. And then suddenly you become successful with the song or, you know, multiple songs, and then people start coming to see you. And suddenly it just seems like this crazy, weird trajectory. I feel like that would be a really weird phenomenon that I can't even, like,
yeah,
know
I mean,
what it would be like.
This whole journey is weird, you know what I mean? Like, you never know what's around the corner. There's no, like, there's things that have happened to me that I was like, I never thought that would happen, or you really can't predict anything. You know, like, I could write a song tomorrow that could flip the world on its head, you know what I mean? And, like,
yeah,
or I could not. And like, and it, but that's what's sort of, that's what's so amazing about it, is that it's all in your hands, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
any day I could write something or something could happen that could change my life, and that's, that excitement is what keeps me in this industry, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that makes me not want to sit at a desk and be like, well, what's going to happen tomorrow when I do this paperwork for the man? No offense to anyone doing paperwork for the man.
No, I understand that, and it's probably also more satisfying when you do find success with things that you did yourself.
Of course, yeah,
you know. I feel like you're a pretty open book about the...
I'm too open.
Are you?
My thing.
Wait, do you feel like you... Are you one to kind of like overshare stuff? Or are you sort of...
I've been told I've overshared in the past, but I really don't have a filter and I really can't be bothered to filter myself.
Yeah.
And so you kind of just get what you get. And that may involve a story or two that I shouldn't tell, but I tell it anyway. And I guess people can judge it for me, judge me on it later. But yeah, I'm pretty much an open book.
I feel like that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
why not?
It's, you know, better.
Want to keep things interesting for the people. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's better to be that way. You know? I feel like it's better to be that way than to be like almost too scared to, I mean, especially what you do, to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
You know, how did you, I'm curious about how you learned to write songs.
Well, I mean, I first started writing songs with my brother when we were like 10 or something like that. And it was just like, you listen to songs that you love, and then I would just sing melodies and I would come up with lyrics and concepts. And, you know, those days it was all about a girl or a party or whatever, and they're all pretty terrible and pretty generic, but I could rhyme, you know. I had a thing with words. So, and then it was, then it became like I studied, you know what I mean? Like, I studied all the great songs, and I think you have a sense for melody, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
as a singer, you most good singers have a sense of melody and where they, you know, what is catchy. And then I signed my publishing deal with a Swedish publisher, and the Swedes are known for pop music and, you know, Max Martin and people like that. And I started studying the way they write songs, and I went to Sweden and spent, you know, a year there writing with all, you know, incredible songwriters that have written from everyone from Celine Dion to Robin to, you know, all of the great pop acts. And and that's when it sort of got more nitty gritty, and I used to write a song a day, just practice, like anything, you know what I mean? I remember being on my first writing trip to Sweden. It was freezing cold. I was with Turtle, we were dragging our suitcases through the snow, and we stayed in this random's house who ended up not giving us the right key. But anyway, we were writing a song a day, and I remember one day I ran out of things, and we left the session and with no song. And in Sweden, they turn them out like that. Like, literally, you get there, you meet someone, by the end of the day, you walk away with a demo. And they're usually pretty good, and we, you know, we end up getting signed off those songs. And this one day, I had nothing, and nothing was getting me off. And I remember leaving, and I was almost in tears because I thought it was like, it's over. Like, yeah. I didn't write anything today.
Day 106.
That's how hard I am on myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it was literally like after writing a song a day for like 40 days or something like that. Now I'm completely different. I don't like write. I only write with people I really like writing with. And like, but at that time, that's how many songs I was writing. Do you know what I mean? So that's what gets you good at it, I guess. And you're constantly just learning from people, and, you know.
Yeah.
I guess
that's it. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm always. Because I feel like if someone right now, to me, it was like, all right, write a song, specifically a catchy pop song.
Yeah.
It seems like there's some type of pattern or system you would follow. Because like, I've heard like Sia talk about it, or even I saw you in a picture with Bonnie McKee, who I used to love, Bonnie McKee, and I went to some of her concerts.
Really? I love Bonnie. She's one of my close friends.
With I saw her with Ryan Cabrera. Do you remember Ryan Cabrera?
Yeah.
Tall, of course. Anyways, and I know she writes songs for
a ton of people. She's incredible, yeah. She's a great, she's one of the best.
But yeah, and like Anthony Kiedis, for example, he'll like just, it seems like, I read his book and he would always talk about how he just like would write poems.
Yeah. So that, I mean, Bonnie's more of a lyric, I mean, she does it all, but like she's great with lyric. And obviously Anthony is incredible with lyric as well. So I think you definitely have your different styles of writers.
Yeah.
I think Sia does it all. I'm more melody and stuff like that. Like, or like I'll have one concept in my head, but like usually I'll just get in the booth and I'll sing something and it'll be a word that would have been in my head for a thingy and I'll start singing around a word, whatever. Just say that's like sacred or something like that, or something that sounds interesting to me and that's something I haven't heard. And but then some people have lyrics and they're just like incredible with lyric and they have a way of wording things in just that slightly clever way that you haven't heard before, do you know what I mean? But it's still simple enough for the general public to get and for anyone to grasp onto and put it into their own way or deal with it in their own way. And I think you just get better with it. Like the average melody starts to not impress you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to like look at different ways of phrasing that so it's like more unique and, you know, you just pick up things like that over the years until you figure out your thing.
Yeah. Do you feel like, so when you were writing your Healing Hands and Come Clean, the more recent singles, that seemed to be like, from what you say, you were kind of like going crazy, like partying. And you're sort of like taking those experiences and putting them out into a song. So do you feel like writing those songs was sort of like you felt better afterward? Like, do you get some type of something from when you write down songs and produce them? Like, do you feel like it's, instead of
I hate it when people say that because it's just so cheesy. We were talking about it the other day. Like, I need this. This is my therapy.
No, but a lot of singers, to me. Seriously, a lot of singers talk about that. Like, Brandon Boyd talks about that all the time.
I mean, yes, it does. It's some type of, you don't write it. It's got to mean something to you. Like, Come Clean specifically was like, I was trying to be sober for my girlfriend at the time and she was begging me to stop drinking and I couldn't stop and I didn't want to stop at the end of the day. I was still, in my head, I was like, I'm good. Like, she's just whining, you know what I mean? She doesn't get it. She doesn't understand. But she's great and I really should change for her. So I was trying to do like a month sober and Whitney, who I wrote it with, is a close friend of mine and I party with her. Well, she's seen me party the majority of the time and she was like, you're really different today. She's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, sober. Sorry, I don't know if we can swear on this, but anyway, I was like, yeah, I was trying to be sober for so and so, and Busby, who's a great writer as well, he's done a lot of stuff with Pink and stuff. Started playing these soulful chords that just sounded sad, and I started just talking about it, and it just poured out. The song was written in about 40 minutes, and it was very, you know, straight to the point, like put down the booze and the cocaine and things like that. And like, I was like, it's probably too straight. Like, it's probably too like specific to me.
Right.
That people won't get it and the label won't probably like it. And then when we played it, when we finished it, but there was a soul to it, you know what I mean? There was something in it that felt real.
Yeah.
And my voice cut through in a different way. So when we played it to people, surprisingly, that was the one that they really connected with. They were like, that's the truth. So that was really nice, and that was therapeutic in a way. Healing Hands was more me and my friend Rabel wrote it, and it was more like he's had his things with addiction and stuff like that, and we both sort of were just being open about it and being like, yo, there's always someone who helps you figure that out, and we should write a song in tribute to those people. Do you know what I mean? The people that have helped you.
I love the choir in that.
Yeah, the gospel. I love a church moment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like anything gospel, anything with a bunch of people singing, and like, I grew up in church, so it's like, that stuff instantly gets me off.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie Get On Up about James Brown's life?
Yes.
I just watched that on the plane.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I love how he is sort of like.
Have you seen Fighting Temptations with Beyonce?
No.
Oh, you gotta see that. There's some great gospel choir moments in that movie.
Is it?
Bit cheesy, but great gospel moments.
I can handle a little bit of cheese.
I mean, Sister Act 2 was like I always mention this, and it's sorry that it's lame, but it's one of the first movies I watched that like completely like I was the kid that would hit the high notes of that.
Is Sister Act 2 the one with the little boy that's like amazing?
Ryan Toby, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool story. I actually wrote with him. I looked him up online and found out who he was. And I was like, listen, you pretty much inspired me to become a singer can we get in the studio? And he's written for Usher, Bieber, a bunch of great people.
Nice.
So we ended up doing a couple of tracks together.
Have you seen, I think that church is right in Hollywood, like off of Franklin, maybe. The Sister Act
no
church.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. When I first moved here, my mother-in-law and I went on a tour, you know, of like,
what, do you mean the big like Scientology one on the Highland and thingy?
No. It looks very Sister Act-y.
Sister Act-y, okay.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember the shooting.
I want to shoot a video in that church.
You should. You could do like, you know, the Louvre kind of thing.
I
but
love
it's
that.
Sister Act church.
Write that down.
Yeah, take some notes. Yeah, that's the James Brown movie. I watched it on a plane, and I have this theory that movies, you always like movies better on planes because there's just nothing else to do, so you're just fully dialed in on the movie. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
And
if you're in the right mood.
True, yeah.
Sometimes I get really inspired. Well, when I used to drink, I used to get really messed up on a plane and then watch like a documentary and get like really inspired.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Did
gone are the days.
So I'm assuming you don't mind flying because you have to fly all the time to like Australia or, you know, whatever.
No, I actually don't like flying at all. I get very scared. For some reason, I just can't, you know, comprehend the whole big ass plane getting up on the air.
Yeah.
But I'm getting better. I don't mind flying. If I'm in business, I don't mind flying. You can keep the plane up there, keep the ice cream coming. But if I'm in economy, I'm pretty much ready to jump out at any point.
I flew, that reminded me.
Without sounding like a complete wanker.
Have you been on the double-decker planes?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Australian ones are always Airbuses. So it's like from LA to Sydney or LA to Brisbane or whatever. Like it's always the big plane, which is, they're so massive now. It just, I don't understand how they get it up there. I get it, but it just, I'm
the
like,
physics.
No. I actually prefer being on a private jet because it's small and like nifty and it's like, that makes sense that it's going up in the air.
Yeah. Right. When it's huge, there's like hundreds of people on there. Doesn't seem odd. I know. I was just on a plane and the landing, takeoff and landing is the only time it's like manual. You know, the rest of the time it's just like you put it in automatic and you're just cruise control.
Yeah.
But when you take off and land, that's the time where I'm like, okay,
yeah.
All right, like breathe in, breathe out. And
yeah, I'm the same.
And the plane, I just flew to Cincinnati where I'm from, and the plane landed and it was like one of those weird landings. Like you could tell it was coming in and like each side is like bumping up and down, up and down, and then one side's a little bit less and you know, whatever. I'm like,
yeah.
I get a little nervous.
I don't think I'll ever get used to that feeling.
No, not at all. Actually that same flight that I was on, a couple rows behind me, I heard this guy, some girl, you know, we're standing up, I was in coach, and this standing up waiting to get off, and some girl goes, "You look really familiar," to this guy behind me, and he's like, "Oh yeah, my brother was in the Backstreet Boys," and it was Aaron Carter.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone loved Aaron Carter back in the day. I remember all the girls I had crushes on all wanted Aaron, and I was so cut, but I kind of felt like I was little and had blonde hair. I kind of felt like I could like get the girls because I looked a bit like him.
How old is he? You think he's like... He's like, late 20s, early 30s.
He'd be like 30 now, I reckon.
Yeah, because when I was in middle school, I feel like he was around my age.
Yeah.
Like Aaron's Party when that came out.
Oh my gosh. No, what was the big one? Crush on You. I found out I got a crush on you. That was the banger.
What about That's How I Beat Shaq?
No, you can mean Crush on You was massive. It's number one worldwide smash.
Yeah. Who did you like growing up? Like, who were your most favorite?
I was a huge Spice Girls fan. Like, I was like, when Jerry left the band, I came down with a knife in my hand and I was like, "Mom, it's over."
No.
And I had like, I went to an all boys private school, right? At 10 years of age, and you know, it's not the coolest thing to admit that you like Spice Girls. I rock up on the first day of school with every book I own covered in Spice Girls posters.
Oh.
Get to my desk, start putting Spice Girls up on my desk, which we don't have lockers in Australia, we have desks. So the whole desk is filled with Jerry Halliwell. And the guys are looking at me like, what is this guy doing? And then I explained that they were hot and they were like, listen to the records and stuff like that. And then, you know, it became cool.
When to become.
Oh my gosh, the song still gets me every time.
that's a great
That's
song.
Not what I mean, I was into pop, obviously, like that when I was very young. Like, that was sort of it. But like Craig David, I was massively into him.
He sings like, "Can you feel me in?"
That's Craig David? One of his songs. But he has many great songs, the thing, yeah. And I actually wrote with him as well on this record, which is amazing. He became a friend, which is kind of like a dream come true. Michael Jackson was my biggest influence by far. And just like great songs. Like I just loved anything that had like an incredible timeless melody to it I found myself attached to it, whether that be like Aerosmith or Drop to Jupiter Train, like just songs that came through the 90s and the early 2000s that just had a timeless, Savage Garden, like a timeless pop melody. That's what I would be drawn to.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Mm. I'm really into Incubus. I'm really into like
Incubus,
the rock
Drive
bands.
I love that, yeah. Matchbox 20, like 3 a.m. and Goo Goo Dolls, Iris, what a song. Like those songs, like, I don't know whether it just reminds me of my childhood and like my first crushes and stuff, but when those songs, like, my playlist in the car is one of the lamest things you'll ever hear. Like,
really?
Yeah, I mean, one of the lamest slash coolest.
I love that song. I don't know when it came out, but it's Fugees.
Fugees, Killing Me Softly.
Strong.
That's my first song I ever learned.
With real, like, singing?
My mom bought the tape. First thing, I would record myself doing it. I would learn all the songs off the back of the tape.
There's a couple songs that you're sort of like, if you were on a road trip and you just want to, like, blare a song, just sing really loud, don't care. I'm not good at singing, so you know, just whatever, don't care if anyone's listening. It would be that song or Lenny Kravitz, Fly Away.
That's they're great picks. I couldn't pick two better.
So is there anyone out there, I guess, that you're like trying to plant the seed to work with, that you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big hip-hop fan, so Kanye West is, I've always been a big supporter of his work, and just anything. I know a lot of people think he says some silly things sometimes, but I just think he's the best. I think he's God's gift too.
Yeah, talk about like nostalgia. I feel like 808 and Heartbreak is when I was in college.
Yeah,
and it was like all those songs just
totally
remind me.
I mean, for me it was College Dropout. I went to the first show he ever did in Australia, and I bought the t-shirt with the teddy bear on it, and like I listened to that record back to back, and it was the first like rapper like that was like using all those samples, and like it had this like, I don't know, like this, he was using like gospel-y samples and like Motown samples and stuff, and like it just it didn't feel.
Is Through
like,
the Wire on that?
Yeah, Through the Wire. Oh my gosh, what a song! Through the Wire and like All Falls Down and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So I fell in love with him that, and then when the Taylor Swift thing happened, I loved him even more. And then
he just continues. When he called her out.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. It's about time people start calling people out.
Yeah.
I loved his honesty. And so he'd be on top of the list. And then just like some of the great singers. I love Frank Ocean. I think new guys. I think Tom Misch, that guy from England, is just outstanding. Rex Orange County, Maxwell, D'Angelo.
I see Maxwell a lot on Spotify.
Yeah, Maxwell's amazing. Like for like sultry, like R&B, if you want to like get the ladies going.
Yeah.
That's the way you go.
I have a question about performing. Do you feel like, okay, my husband and I are really big Red Hot Chili Pepper fans to Incubus. Who isn't?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. We just did a cover of theirs actually in Venice. Felt very like
Venice Queen.
Under the Bridge, no. We just wanted to recreate that video of when him and Joe Frusciante are like singing and they're completely high out of their minds and they're like the guitar's completely out of tune, but like it's kind of awesome. You know the one? Like they're in Amsterdam and he's wearing overalls and Joe Frusciante's wearing no t-shirt.
What year? What era of John Frusciante?
It's like 80s, like it's like MTV just started, that kind of vibe.
Gotcha.
It looks sick. You just YouTube it. So me and my boy Matt tried to like recreate that video.
Nice.
Very poorly.
Will it be released?
It's out. It's on YouTube now. You can check it out.
Okay, I'll look it up. Cole and I, my husband, called Red Hot Chili. Specifically, I feel like there's this funny thing about John Frusciante. He's just like a very interesting character.
Oh, totally.
And we like ended up calling them like John and the Red Hots, because I feel like any Red Hot Chili Pepper fan is kind of like, their current guitarist, Josh, is great.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be great to play in that band.
Of course, But there's no John Frusciante.
They're sort of like, John Frusciante.
I remember we saw them a big day out and we just like, I don't know about his new guitarist. he's incredible. But it's just like, you can't, I mean, it's hard for him to fill that role. Do you know what I mean? Like anyone's going to be like, we want to see John Frusciante play. Like those riffs are so iconic.
Yeah.
But you know, so no matter how much he shreds, it's still like, you know, you wish you were seeing thingy. But I mean, God bless him. He's doing a great job.
Yeah, definitely. He's awesome. We just saw them actually in last year on their tour last year. And they were like, Flea was literally doing like walking handstands across the stage. I mean, they're like in their 50s. They've obviously been doing this forever.
Yeah.
They have like an insane amount of energy.
Flea's energy on stage is just not. I remember the first time I saw them, it was just like, wow, you just couldn't take your eyes off him.
Yeah, they're.
That was the first book I ever read as well, Scar Tissue.
Yeah, that's a great book. Yeah. Flea's writing a book,
really?
Acid for the Children.
Oh,
and it's coming
wow.
out.
That's
going to
be
fall.
Amazing.
Yeah. We got to get his perspective. But anyway, so what I was going to ask you is someone like, so John Frusciante is kind of like an interesting guy because it's almost like, because when he left the Red Hot Chili Peppers, he was like, I don't want to perform anymore. I never liked performing. That was never me.
Yeah.
I'm more so just immersed in the music. And I feel like when I'm in front of the crowd, it just started to become sort of, I'm aware that they're there and I'm like doing things for them and not just like for the sake of singing. And he just felt like he never, like performing, I guess, to him became, started to become sort of more of an effort than he liked to do.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like performing is something you've had to work on versus just like singing and making music? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. Like, I've always, performing has been a big driving force for why I want to do this.
Gotcha.
Like,
I'm an entertainer,
do you know what I mean? So, like, that's what I get off on, having a microphone in my hand and having the crowds, like, having the power in a weird, without sounding weird, you know what I mean? Like, having, to be able to command that many people and be like, listen to this. And that's kind of what I'm good at, you know what I mean? Like, so for me, that's the best part about the whole gig.
Yeah.
The songs are incredible. So, like, when you finish that song, when I finish a great song and I'm thinking about, wow, imagine singing this to someone, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not thinking about, oh, I'm really glad I got that off my chest. I'm thinking about, wow, imagine playing that at Madison Square Garden.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, playing that in a stadium. That's insane.
Like, that's what I want to think about. So I love performing more than anything.
Well, then that's a good combo.
Yeah. So I'm in the right profession, hopefully.
Yeah. Poor John.
That being said, make sure you get tickets to my show that's coming up, guys, in September.
I was going to say, we should talk about that. So you're going to tour in Australia and then you're going to be here, right?
Yeah, it's my first headline tour here. It's called the Come Clean Tour. And I'm going to be playing all the songs from my up and coming album, plus, you know, old stuff. And it's going to be stripped back and intimate performance. But I feel like this is the people that are going to be at these shows are hopefully going to be fans for life. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, it's a very important moment for me to sort of give everything and tell these stories in a way that, you know, I know how to do, and just sing my ass off for everyone. Make them all believers, you know.
Yeah. Believers.
Believers. Calibers.
Calibers.
This doesn't work with my name, does it?
You can think of something. My last question is, do you feel like you'll ever cut your hair? I don't think you should. I mean, I like the flow. But
well, thank you for the compliment. We did discuss it with, you know, because when you're putting a new record out, everyone sort of has opinions on, you know, maybe a new look, or like we're bringing a stylist.
Oh,
to
kind of like,
you know,
spice
I mean?
Like, it up.
Yeah, like
new
we should
Conrad.
Change it up.
Yeah.
But so someone brought it up and I was just like, listen, like I've always had long hair, and someone once told me that, you know, you can cut your hair when you're old and you've got kids. So I'm going to keep my long hair. Plus, everyone just cut their hair, you know, like James Bay cut his hair off, Harry cut his hair off. So then it'll just look like I'm following the trend if I cut it now. So I'm not going to cut it. I'm going to be the one that kept it long and then wait for it to be cool again to have long hair.
Do you condition your hair a lot?
I only condition my hair. I rarely wash it. Unless I go to the gym, I'll wash it. But it's actually bad to shampoo your hair too much, my hairdresser told me. So I just condition, makes it silky and smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And then put a little, you know...
Like leave-in conditioner.
I have, my boy Lee Rinder, who's my hairdresser over here, who tames the mane. He gives me lots of nice products and just makes it smell good.
Yep.
But you know.
There's nothing like the smell of walking into a hair salon.
Oh, my gosh. I love a nice-smelling hair product, nice little Moroccan oil or something like that.
Moroccan oil.
Yeah.
That's great for hair.
Yeah, it's good.
Gotcha.
Now I'm going to have to do a deal with Moroccan oil. Jeez.
Right?
I'm open to any hair deals. Send them my way, guys.
Yeah. That'd
be... Reach out to my management over
there's
at
something...
UTA. Thank you.
There's something sold at common drugstores called It's a 10.
Really?
It's amazing.
It's a 10.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's kind of expensive for a drugstore, like for CVS or something. It's like,
is that what you use in your hair?
Yes.
It's a 10.
It's
well,
everything.
It is looking like a 10.
Oh, thank you. No, it's a 10 is because it has 10 things it does. Like leave-in conditioner, detangler,
marketing right
shine. It's awesome. So if you ever need a new product, I would check
that.
That
reminds me of something about Mary when he's like 6-minute abs. Yeah. How about 4-minute abs?
No.
It's 5-minute abs.
It's a great
one. Right.
So you guys are moving on, right? You're going to around
We're
town.
Going to continue to promote this record of mine. Come Clean and Healing Hands out now. Everyone go get amongst it.
Yeah.
Go listen to some real music, kids. That's get right. inspired.
Get inspired. Bring it on the plane.
And make sure you come out to my shows. They're in September. They're all over the country. Details are at conradofficial.com. Look at me shamelessly promoting myself.
Wait, yeah, I wrote it down. Not? You're in LA October 2nd at Peppermint Club.
Yeah.
We'll put that down in the thing.
Yes, come say hi. It's going to be nice. It's going to be a great night.
Yep, he'll have shiny, flowing hair.
Yep, I promise I'll wear the hair down, flick it around.
Yes, all right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Good chat.
Good chat.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you enjoyed the show, we would love for you to tell a friend about it, leave a rating and review of what specific episode you enjoyed, or even better yet, take a screenshot on your phone of this episode and share it on your Instagram story or Facebook and tag us at Olympic and Bundy to help spread the word. And don't forget to subscribe to Olympic and Bundy wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're in LA, Conrad is at the Peppermint Club in West Hollywood on October 2nd. I'm Kelly Taylor, and thanks again for listening.